These are challenging times for the Roman Catholic Church, brought about by the scandal of sex abuse committed by priests and, in some cases, their superiors. Tomorrow, Pope Francis meets at the Vatican with the heads of the world's conferences of bishops. The meeting is called The Protection of Minors in the Church. It's described as a rallying moment to ensure that all bishops are on the same page in weeding out abusers and responding to abuse complaints. Last week, we learned powerful American Cardinal Theodore McCarrick is no longer powerful. He has been defrocked after the church found he had sexually abused minors and seminarians for decades. This was the first time a cardinal has been kicked out of the priesthood for offenses like this. Also tomorrow, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel will report on the state's investigation into sexual abuse committed by priests here in Michigan going back to 1950. That probe began under former AG Bill Schuette last summer, and it involves every diocese in Michigan, seven in all, covering some 2 million Michigan Catholics. Among those Catholics are my two guests today. Both are involved in grassroots groups of laypersons. They formed in response to the sex abuse problems in the church. Jason Negri is co-founder and executive director of the Daniel Coalition in the Lansing Diocese. Jason, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Richard Brenz is co-founder of the Gaylord Diocesan Watch. Dr. Brenz, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jason, I'll start with you. Why did you believe your activist group of lay Catholics is needed? What's the mission?
Well, the need is obvious. When the McCarrick affair broke last summer, there were lots of conversations taking place on social media, personally. Every Catholic really was concerned about this. We thought we had been through this with the previous scandals when they broke in Boston in 2002. Now here we are, more of the same. And while the statistics and the studies do indicate that the worst days in terms of abuse were behind us, the fact remains that much work still needs to be done, unfortunately. Many of the predators have been rooted out. However, some of them are still there. The focus was largely on sexual abuse of children, which is devastating and horrible to everybody. But not enough information has been out and not enough discussion has been had regarding sexual abuse of adults, which has been taking place, unfortunately, for as long as the church has been around. It's not a problem to the church, it's a problem to the human condition, but there's no place for it in the church. And the focus these days tends to be more on that, bringing those problems to the attention of the bishops and then encouraging them, shall we say, to do the right thing.
Dr. Brenz, why co-found the Gaylord Diocesan Watch?
Like Jason said, part of the problem has been that we haven't had any protective mechanisms in place for adults. Oftentimes it's been viewed in the past that adult abuse was somehow consensual,
right,
that there was no interplay between the fact that one person was in a higher level, higher position of power over another. And while our primary goal here was to inform the public that a priest of ours had been what we felt to be unfairly disciplined for reporting abuse, we felt that there's also a need here in our community to have an alternative for people to report abuse to, because right now your options are you can report to the civil police or you can report to the diocese. Well, for a vast number of reasons, those aren't very favorable places to respond for most people. They want some place that feels safer. And so Gaylord Diocesan Watch kind of arose to try to fill that need.
Let's talk about two cases of accusations leveled against priests in your respective dioceses. Both accusers are junior priests, not minors, not children. And Dr. Brenz, you were referring to the sexual harassment allegations against Father Dennis Stillwell, a Petoskey pastor. Tell us briefly about this and the response from the Diocese of Gaylord.
Father Matthew Cowan is a priest who's only been a priest for 5 years, and in his first assignment as a priest, he was assigned in the Petoskey parish of St. Francis Xavier under Father Stillwell. And Father Cowan made allegations 2 years after the fact now that Father Stillwell had inappropriately touched him in a sexual manner. He reported this to the diocese, who then reported it to civil authorities, and civil authorities said that the statute of limitations had expired on making that sort of claim. And Father Cowan has been what we would call railroaded and steamrolled in that he's not heard anything specifically from the diocese, or at least he hadn't for about 5 months, and felt that with the advent of the McCarrick case becoming public, he too had been sexually groomed.
And the response of the Diocese of Gaylord was, as I understand it, not to remove Father Stillwell, but to remove his accuser.
Correct. Father Cowan was placed on an administrative leave for 6 months' time for reasons that only the bishop knows. the accused, Father Stilwell, was left in his full administrative capacity as Vicar General of the diocese.
And in the case of your diocese, Jason Negri, tell us about the accusations against Father Mark Englott, who was pastor of East Lansing St. Thomas Aquinas Parish.
Substantially similar situation. You have a younger junior associate pastor who made allegations against Father Mark Englott for sexual harassment. Now, in the sexual realm, in workplace environments, this sort of stuff just does not happen. In the Me Too generation, we're very well aware of the differential in power. The power dynamic really does tend to put people off, so it's understandable why subordinates would be reluctant to bring these sorts of things forward. Well, in this case, they were brought forward. The response on the part of the diocese was to remove both priests from the parish, with, from what I understand, a minimal explanation as to why. And the result, of course, was a lot of talk among the parishioners wondering why exactly this happened, who's telling the truth. People were lining up in camps supporting either of the priests because nobody was completely certain exactly what happened. And I understand the bishop was under a little bit of pressure because, of course, the associate pastor was embarrassed to have had to say something about this, that the unwanted attention in these types of situations is very uncomfortable. So I get that. But they were both removed. The parish was thrown into turmoil. And a canonical investigation was launched into Father Englott, and the results of which apparently resulted in his removal, and that the diocese just came out with that statement a couple of days ago. The problem here is, of course, the statement that the diocese made was insufficient.
Not transparent.
No, not at all. The headline simply said that he was, quote, granted senior status. To the average person, even to the average Catholic, they don't know what that means. Normally, when a priest is granted senior status, it's simply a transition of what we would call retirement. They don't have a permanent full-time assignment. They have their priestly faculties. They are called upon very often, especially in these days of priest shortages, to fill in and to do what's necessary. Well, lower down in the announcement, the diocese did say, of course, that his priestly faculties have been removed. But again, the average person doesn't know what that means. They may think that's an ordinary part of transition to senior status. It needs to be made clear why he was removed, that this was in fact a punishment.
Why is oversight by lay groups like yours, people who are not priests, why are they needed? When you look at cases like this, Dr. Brenz, why does a group like yours matter?
Catholics have historically been people that have been referred to as those who pay, pray, and obey, meaning we have much reverence for our priests and bishops. We don't call into question any of their actions until such time as it starts to affect children. Now, this is wrong at its core. You know, we should be interested when it affects anybody. But because the priests themselves are beholden to the bishop, and the bishop really controls their lives, they're less likely to come forward and to make allegations, especially when you see that another priest has been taken to the woodshed, so to speak, over his allegations. It just promotes secrecy, and it increases the opacity rather than increasing transparency in the church.
And the whole issue of transparency and opacity is something that is at the root of all of the headlines we hear about the church's historic handling of accusations against priests. Well, now we have the state of Michigan. Tomorrow, we get an update from Attorney General Dana Nessel. Is this outside probe something, Jason, that you welcome as a lay Catholic?
I absolutely do. The rationale for this is the same rationale for why we have to have lay Catholic groups providing this accountability. Predatory priests are harming people, men, women, and children. They need to get out now, and if the bishops won't do it voluntarily, they're going to be made to do it, whether by the civil law, in this case the investigations by the Attorney General, or the shame of public exposure, or the revolt of the faithful, which is exactly what you have happening right now. Our groups didn't exist a year ago. They exist now. We're not leaving the church. We don't want to destroy the church, but this level of accountability is a necessary component. We're taking co-responsibility for our church.
Dr. Brenz?
Jason's absolutely right. In our role as a diocesan watch group, we've appealed to the bishop to let us help him be a better bishop, to let us help him find out what's going on in the diocese, to try to make the concerns of the normal parishioner his concerns. And he said that he may not be a very good father, and we're here to help him in that fatherly role as much as we can.
How does all of this, Jason, affect everyone in Michigan, whether they're Catholic or not Catholic?
Well, I think whether you're Catholic or not, there is a tendency among everybody to look to the Catholic Church as having some special standing. I mean, the old joke is everybody hates Catholics until you need an exorcist. There's very much a position of tradition and heritage and authority that the Catholic Church has, whether you subscribe to her beliefs or not. So for the Church, which is supposed to be a steward of the teachings of the holiest man to ever walk the earth, if they're failing in this responsibility and institutionally covering up predators, that demoralizes everybody. The Church needs to get its own house in order. I mean, Pope Francis has characterized the Church as a field hospital where the wounds and hurts of the world can be bound up and healed. And that's true, but it's the worst sort of cognitive dissonance for representatives of that same institution to be the cause of so many hurts and ills. It needs to change.
Dr. Brenz, what are you looking for from Attorney General Nessel tomorrow?
Well, I think we're looking for her to, number one, be bluntly honest about how widespread the scandal is and to give us, you know, information that we can use in our own diocese to address the scandal and to help formulate new programs within the diocese that might help prevent this in the future, especially as it refers to the abuse of adults. We already have policies that treat children, but we need more to protect everybody and not just them.
Exactly.
Jason Negri and Dr. Richard Brenz, both founders of activist lay watch groups in their respective dioceses, Lansing Diocese and the Gaylord Diocese. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us on Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you for having me.